Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So as I said, we're going to continue with our beginner's guide to some of the best music stars of all time. We've already covered a fair bit of ground, revisiting the hits and less explored corners of the careers of Elton John, Miley Cyrus, U2, Shania Twain and Beyoncé, to name just a few. The idea is obviously that we're going to take a band or a singer that you think you know, but show you why you need to take a deeper dive into their back catalogue. Last time we talked about Oasis. Today, as we prepare to mark 12 years since her untimely death and the 20th anniversary of her debut album Frank, we are going to talk about Amy Winehouse with Sive Downs from RT Lyric FM and RT Culture Writer. Sive, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
You a big fan?
I'm a huge fan. I love Amy. I'm a massive, massive, massive Amy Winehouse fan. That's why I'm here.
Good. Well, so you are the best person then to start us off with the early life where, not surprisingly, I suppose, jazz was a big influence.
Yeah. So Amy, let's start from the very beginning. So Amy was born 14th September 1983 to her dad, Mitch, who was a window panelist, and her mother, Yanis, who was a pharmacist. So like you said, jazz was such a huge part of Amy's upbringing. It's not the typical genre that, you know, little kids would be listening to. Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan. It's not the typical, you know, catalogue for a kid of that age.
But blues-edged jazz.
Exactly,
we're talking
about. Soul, blues, jazz, even early R&B, Motown, that sort of thing. So she used to speak about her dad listening to a lot of Frank Sinatra. A lot of Amy's extended family were actually jazz musicians. And famously, her grandmother, Cynthia, dated Ronnie Scott, who is a really famous jazz saxophonist, and he founded the jazz club in Soho in London. So it was
all around her then, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So she was also in the National Jazz Youth Orchestra as a teenager, which of course that would have laid the foundations of, you know, the musical cornerstones of jazz, you know, pentatonic scales, all that sort of thing. And then Amy went to the Brit School, she's an alumni of the Brit School, as is Adele, very famously. So that's kind of where her musical grounding started, the foundations.
As she was very, very young when she met somebody who was to become one of the signature musical influences in her life, Simon Fuller. 16 years of age, he took her under his wing.
Yeah, 16 years old. So Amy had a demo, a tape. And Simon, for anyone that doesn't know, is one of the most powerful men in the music business. He started the Spice Girls career. At the time he signed Amy to his management, he had Victoria Beckham, S Club 7, people that were really, really big at that time. So she was signed to his management, taken on as an unnamed recording artist in the beginning, which means she was writing music for other artists, she was recording backing vocals, she wasn't really focusing on her career as a solo artist. But in 2002, she signed to Island Records, where she began her solo endeavours.
And she was 20 when the first album, Frank, was released. Let us hear Help Yourself from that album.
I can't help you if you won't help yourself.
Now, this earned her a clutch of Brit nominations and an awful lot of attention, but she wasn't very happy with it.
No, that's the funny thing. Like, I think if you listen to Frank, even listen to that track there, you can tell it's very jazz. So, you know, the syncopation is very heavy, all the traditional features of the genre. But Amy has said, and she'd never used to hold back in interviews, that was one thing about Amy. She said that it was only 80% of her own ideas on this album. So, you know, the mixing, you know, the samples, all that sort of thing, that she felt like she didn't really have the creative control control that she wanted to. And overall, the album didn't land in the musical landscape at the time as maybe people thought it did. It would. It didn't do as well. But I did some research. At the time, the top three hits were from The Cheeky Girls, Girls Aloud and The Sugar Babes. So maybe it wasn't the right time for Amy to, you know, to, in that way, you know, maybe she wasn't, you know, going to get the number one that she hoped for. But I think it was a good starting point for Amy.
Okay. Then we come to the breakthrough album, the thing that made her name, yes. Back to Black.
Yes. Back to Black is, I think it's when Amy really was able to come into herself. It was co-produced by Mark Ronson, who is one of the biggest producers in the world. He is the executive producer of the Barbie movie, which we can't get away from at the moment. Yeah, so it contains all the traditional arcs of souls, blues, jazz, but it really, it's in a modern 21st century guise, and it's very playful, you know, a lot of satirical lyrics, and it's inspired by, a lot of it is 50s and 60s Motown music. So, you know, the Supremes, the Temptations, the Ronettes, Amy loved them, and that's where we see the beehive hairstyle. That's where that comes from. That's where the inspiration was.
Do you know, though, for me, as amazing as the album was, it also marks the kind of the point where there's a sadness here, because she started to lean into this tragic persona, and Mark Ronson encouraged her to play up to that, particularly with songs like Rehab. And that is ultimately Amy Winehouse's kind of tragedy, isn't it? The way that we view her now is not exclusively as an immensely talented artist, a fantastic person, but as this figure of tragedy.
Exactly. And her satirical lyrics are so indicative of that. It's satire, but, you know, it comes from immense pain and an immense trauma, which is really, I suppose, capitalised in, you know, used for music. And she made amazing, beautiful music.
She did. And this song in particular that we're about to hear now, I mean, the story is that she was goofing around and messing with Mark Ronson and saying, look, I mean, I know I'm a bit of a drinker, I know I'm a bit of a hellraiser, but there's absolutely no way that anybody's ever going to send me to rehab. And he went, what? Hang on a second. That line, say it again. And they went from playing pool straight into a recording studio.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they try to make me go to rehab.
There is not a Radio 1 listening foot that is not tapping right now. That is the brilliant thing about that song and so many other songs on that album. It was explosive, wasn't it?
Oh, it was explosive. This really launched Amy's career in the US and in the UK. It was the best-selling album in the UK 2007, selling over 1.85 million copies. Rehab was in the top 10 in the UK and the US. It was very important here. She broke the US with this album, and Time magazine named Rehab the best song of 2007. It really started so much for Amy's career.
It really did. It was around this time that she performed with Other Voices in Dingle. Here she is singing Tears Dry on Their Own live at Other Voices.
It's my responsibility. You don't owe nothing to me. But to walk away, I have no capacity. He walks away. The sun goes down. He takes the day. But I'm home. And then you're great. In this blue. Say my tears to write on their own. I don't understand. Why do I stress a man when there's so many bigger things at hand? We could have never had it all. We had to hit a wall. So this is a never to bow withdraw. Even if I stop wanting you and perspective pushes through, I'll be some next man's other woman's show. I cannot play myself again. I should just be my own best friend. I fuck myself in the head with stupid man. He walks away. The sun goes down. He takes the day, but I am grown. And in your way, in this blue, say my tears dry on their own. So we are history.
And that, it has to be stressed once again, folks, is a live performance, which is what makes it so amazing. You listen back to the lyrics of all of these things now, knowing what you know about what was going on in her personal life, particularly that relationship with Blake Fielder Civil, her former production assistant on the music videos, and you can't help but just look at it all in a much different light.
Exactly. I think we were all seeing Amy's career, her trajectory, she was unstoppable. But the irony of it, her personal life was really taking a hit at the time. I think one moment which is so indicative of that is her Grammy win, where she won 5 Grammys in the 10th of February 2008. And Tony Bennett, who was her idol,
five
Grammys. So he says, and the winner is Amy Winehouse.
Again and again.
Yeah, and her whole band is screaming, you know, and she is paralysed, staring into the distance, which I think is really, it's such a cinematic moment, and that Amy wasn't really living in the reality that we all were, and that even her bandmates were. She was living in a total different reality.
What do you mean by that?
I think at the time she was so consumed by addiction, and she maybe couldn't even recognise her own success and her own greatness and what she was doing. You know, when you're in the throes of depths of addiction, it's a really hard time. So I think that moment is so indicative of that, of her state of mind at the time.
Okay. Unfortunately, we've got very, very little time left, and I'm going to take just the last 30 seconds of the programme for this incredible moment in 2009, when things seemed to be getting better for her. She performed at a celebration for Nelson Mandela's 90th in Hyde Park in London. This, Sive Downs, thank you very much, before I finish up. This is Free Nelson Mandela alongside a gospel choir. Oh, the incomparable Amy Winehouse. Sive Downs, thank you very much. As I say, that's all that we have time for. The programme was produced by Barbara Feeney. It's Midday. Over to Louise.